Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Crossland, Corsa and Mokka. Three good reasons to visit the Opel Open Road event.
First though, children in third class and above are required to wear face masks at school from this morning. Now the Department of Education has said schools can be flexible in the application of the rule in the first couple of days, but refusal to adhere to the new guidance could see students being refused entry. Terence Reynolds is the principal of Skullnave Breed in Ballyconnell, County Cavan, and Terence is on the line now. Terence, I know you were taken by surprise at the mandatory rule last night, which I think only emerged around 8 o'clock, but how did parents react to it this morning?
Well, look, they've been very, very good all along through the pandemic, and this morning was no different. It was raised since last weekend, before the weekend, that this was a possibility, so people would have been prepared in any case, but we had full compliance this morning. We didn't have any issues. So going on that, I suppose, look, the parents are willing to support it.
I don't know how you feel, but I think most people would have felt that, you know, this was coming down the tracks, but it would likely be optional. But that memo last night that said that this thing is absolutely mandatory unless you have an exemption which has been signed off in the form of a medical cert from a GP, that took people by surprise.
Yeah, and the wording in the letter that came yesterday evening was shocking, to be honest with you. That it would be issued at evening time and for compliance to be, and the mandatory element of it to be up and running by the following morning. You know, where parents, there are situations where parents may not have been able to get proper fitting masks, who's to know the schools wouldn't have an adequate supply either. Those situations were probably cropping up in schools around the country last night. So it was the immediate nature of it, you know, that we're 20 months into a pandemic. A couple of weeks ago, schools are safe. There was no issues, they're perfectly fine. Then all of a sudden, mask wearing mandatory from tomorrow morning. So It was, you know, the speed of it, really.
Well, I see the minister in the Dáil is saying that schools will adopt a practical approach over the next day or two. But say it comes to Monday and you have somebody refusing to wear a mask and they don't have a medical cert, will you turn them away?
I wouldn't turn them away, no. I think it's, you know, we're given the messaging that we've had over the last 20 months that children don't need to wear masks, didn't need to wear masks. You know, the first part of the pandemic, neither adults nor children mask wearing was recommended. And then all of a sudden, within the space of a couple of days, that a child's education is shunted out and that all of a sudden that mask wearing is absolutely mandatory. I think, you know, it's too quick and too sudden and too blunt to just bring that in without the proper messaging. The messaging hasn't been consistent, and that's where where problems can arise for schools, you know.
Terence, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Well, in the last little while, the Education Minister, Norma Foley, has been speaking in the Dáil on the issue. We can listen to an exchange between her and the Labour Party Education spokesperson, Deputy Eoin O'Riordan.
I think it's important, Deputy, because I've heard from you and indeed from others about the necessity to get the guidelines in place as a matter of urgency. Guidelines are required. We did that yesterday, but we are very clear in the guidelines. And I know schools. I have spent the vast majority of my working life in schools.
We've all worked in schools.
I have the floor, Deputy, and I am aware that schools take a flexible approach. We have advised that they take a flexible approach over the coming days.
Requirement. The word requirement was used. That's not flexibility.
Deputy, please.
Yes, I do believe I have the floor. Thank you. And grandstanding on a matter of public health serves no good purpose.
For the love of God.
In terms of...
For the love of God. If I hear that accusation one more time.
In terms of the opportunity to address the specific question, Cathaoir, look, I would beg your indulgence. In relation to there being an opportunity for schools to take a flexible approach, as they always do on an ongoing basis, they have that flexibility over the coming days.
All right, so that's what's happening in the Dáil. What's happening on the ground, though? Brian O'Doherty, President of the Irish Primary Principals Network. It was the mandatory element, Brian, that really caught people on the hop.
Yes, Claire, good morning. I suppose this comes on foot of the Cabinet's acceptance of NPHET's recommendation on the wearing of face masks in primary schools. And as was referenced in your bulletin and you teased out with Terry there, an information note issued to schools by email yesterday evening, and that was followed later last night by a letter from the CMO, which was to be distributed to parents today. And obviously that details what you've covered there, that pupils in third to sixth class are required to wear face masks, with certain exemptions applying, including for children obviously with medical conditions and those who have additional needs who may find the wearing of masks challenging. But the information note stipulates that medical certificates are required for a child to be exempted from wearing a face mask, although a certain amount of discretion has been afforded to schools in that regard.
Yeah, but even if a child is wearing glasses and a parent says, well, the glasses are fogging up, they can't see if they wear the mask,
Indeed, you need
a GP cert for that.
Yeah, well, you know, a certain amount of discretion has been afforded. We have to see how that will play out in practice. You know, we anticipate that schools are digesting that information this morning, and that they will agree a plan of action in consultation with their boards of management, obviously. And that would obviously be communicated to their school communities. But I was delighted to hear the flexibility has been recommended on this in the short term, if not the longer term, because the focus in schools certainly in the coming days will be on encouraging and supporting compliance as opposed to that enforcement piece.
What are you advising principals to do this morning if they're meeting parents at the school gates and they're saying they don't want their children to wear a mask? I mean, clearly the next few days that might be okay to allow that to happen, but once the grace period is over, it's a different story.
Yeah, no, look, as Terry indicated, you know, we anticipate high levels of compliance from parents and children, similar to that we've enjoyed and encountered since September of last year with the control measures that we already have in place. But there's no doubt a significant challenge would be if a parent does not wish to follow the public health recommendation and the child wouldn't be exempt as of right, you know, because that has direct implications for that child's attendance at school. We'd be of the view that FAQs would be issued and developed as a matter of urgency and issued to schools and parents, you know, to address that issue, to minimise tensions, to show how those circumstances might be managed practically. And that would assist boards of management, you know, greatly in that regard. It's likely to be an emotive issue. I think we even heard that in the exchange there that you heard that you played from the Dáil. Mm-hmm. And at the heart of this are very young children, and the notion of refusing children to entry to school absolutely flies in the face of everything we try and achieve in our schools. We would prefer to promote children's attendance at school, and that's why further guidance and clear communication on the issue would be welcome, as Terry referenced.
I'm sure that would have been welcome and helpful before this was issued last night. Mm-hmm.
Indeed, you know, but having said that, you know, we've got the what in terms of the information note that issued last night, and we have the why in the letter from the CMO to parents. The missing piece of the information jigsaw is the how, and that's the bit that we'd like to see addressed by way of FAQs and clearly communicated.
Brian O'Doherty, President of the Irish Primary Principals Network, thank you for your time this morning. Well, parents who want a medical certificate from a GP to exempt their child from wearing a mask in the classroom are facing a cool reception, it would seem, from family doctors who have dismissed the plan as nonsense, and some GPs took to social media last night to express their frustration at being asked to issue medical cert exemptions. Dr. Yvonne Williams is a GP at the Shannon Medical Centre. And Yvonne, it seems that if a parent feels that their child who wears glasses and can't wear a mask as a result, if they want to make that case in the school, they'll have to go to someone like you to issue a medical cert.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very practical, Claire, does it? And I suppose it's not surprising given what we've had over the last few months that these instructions are coming out after 6 o'clock in the evening, which makes things more difficult at the school level and for GPs. So there hasn't been any formal agreement or discussion with GPs about issuing certificates, but we've seen really good compliance in secondary school children in terms of wearing masks. And I think they're starting with the older age group of children, which is probably more practical, and asking parents and children to start wearing masks now. And like your former speaker said, I think we probably will have quite good levels of compliance with it. A lot of children have been wearing masks anyway, and my own children, a lot of their friends would wear masks going into shops and in public areas, you know, over the last couple of months anyway. And I know in some schools they started wearing masks last week in anticipation of this rule coming in.
It's a different ask, though, wearing a mask going into a shop and coming back out again and taking it off. But having to wear it all day when you're in third class, it might be a challenge for some.
It is, and I think it probably will be quite difficult for children perhaps with more severe autism and with sensory needs who find it very uncomfortable, and perhaps a visor might be a reasonable compromise in those situations. But there aren't that many conditions where children can't wear a mask. You know, a lot of people, there's misconceptions that if you've asthma, you can't wear a mask, or if you've epilepsy, you can't wear a mask. And that isn't necessarily true. And there have been quite good guidelines from the States and the UK where they have had these rules in place for longer. And in many other countries, children as young as 3 or 5 have been wearing masks, and there hasn't been a major issue with it. But I think the tone of the instruction last night was probably unhelpful, you know, particularly for parents who were a little bit uncomfortable with it. It would have been nicer to approach it in a more child-friendly way, with child-friendly videos being available in the schools, you know, to be played for the children before this came into place, particularly when we've been talking about it for a few weeks already.
Yes, indeed. I just want to ask you about the general COVID picture. I see the number of COVID cases in hospital today, according to the updated figures, that number is at 578. That's down 1 on yesterday. But at GP level, what are you seeing?
It's probably been static this week and last week compared to the week before, but we have seen an increase in people coming forward. So I think the last time I was talking to you, we were speaking about delays and people not ringing for maybe 5 or 7 days with symptoms, people doing antigen tests at home when really they needed a PCR test. So we have seen a shift in behaviour. So people are ringing us sooner and they're happier, as happy as anyone can be to isolate. They're more willing to isolate at home and more willing to attend for the PCR test. And there is a growing anxiety about the new variant among people, particularly those who are waiting to be called to the hubs for their booster doses and for people with underlying conditions. And I suppose on that note, you know, we have EMA approval for vaccinations in children. These are the same children we're now asking to wear masks all day in school. So I have an 11-year-old with asthma. She can't access the vaccine. And there are lots of other parents who have young children with underlying conditions, and we can't get them vaccinated, even though it has been approved in Europe. So, I think that is something that NPHET need to do. The masks are only part of the plan in terms of reducing the numbers, but the vaccinations are also quite effective, and I think that needs to be looked at as well.
Yvonne, we'll let you get back to it. Dr. Yvonne Williams there. Well, the other big announcement from yesterday was about travel into the state. All travellers will have to produce a negative COVID-19 test, even if they are fully vaccinated. And I'm joined now by Professor Sam McConkie, infectious disease specialist at the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland. Good morning to you, Sam.
Good morning, Cara. So, thanks for inviting me.
You're very welcome, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us. So the travel restrictions are due to come in on Friday just after midnight. So all travellers into the country will have to have a COVID test before they arrive. How reassured are you by those measures?
I think it's a step in the right direction. I have perhaps two issues with it. First is that we need to make sure that the antigen testing that's been used in these travellers who are coming in is one that's up to scratch and high quality. I think I've made the point several times before over the years that there are some antigen tests which are not so good, and then others of the newer ones perform much better. So not all antigen tests are the same, not any different from, not all cars are the same or any other product the same, but we really need to have high quality antigen tests. The second point I'd make is that it, in my view, would be wise that those same travellers are tested, for example, 2 days and 10 days after they arrive, because it's possible, as we all know, 3 days earlier to have a false negative if you're just incubating the thing, or may even have caught the COVID in the interval between 3 days earlier when you had the test done and the day you travelled. So I think testing also, either with antigen tests or PCR or both, at day 2 and day 10 after you arrive would also help to reassure me that we're not allowing a lot of Omicron variant to spread in Ireland unnecessarily.
Okay, Dr. Gerald Barry on Morning Ireland, Assistant Professor of Virology at UCD, he said that the antigen testing element of this is just window dressing.
Well, that's what I'm suggesting, do more and make sure that the antigen tests are high quality ones. I wouldn't necessarily be so critical as window dressing. If it's done with a really good antigen test and then repeated 2 or 3 times, they can pick up at least, maybe not 100% of the positives, but a lot of the positives with what I'm proposing doing it. 3 days before travel, 2 days after travel and 10 days after travel, you'd expect some of the high quality antigen tests to come up with something.
Okay, we're expecting to hear today whether these 14 samples under review are Omicron. So we're expecting to see whether this variant is here already. If it is there a point in having travel restrictions and testing?
I think there is, Claire. It will slow down its further entry and spread into Ireland. The people who do have Omicron obviously really need to take very seriously their contact tracing obligations, so everyone who's been in contact with them, who they may have got it from and who they may have given it to, really all need to you know, restrict movements and have testing to try and limit and slow its speed. So there is a benefit in slowing the speed of transmission as we continue to roll out our booster program, our vaccination of children and our other control measures. So slowing down its spread in Ireland is a good thing, especially the next 2 to 3 weeks when we're not quite sure how bad it's going to be. We're in this interval when we know it exists, we know it's in South Africa, we know it's spreading there. What we don't know, is it as bad as the previous variants? Because the data from South Africa is that people don't seem to be getting sick, but then most of the population there are younger, and you know, typically younger people don't get sick. Similarly, we don't know how much vaccination will prevent transmission of Omicron. So in this interval, through sadly the first, second, third week of December, slowing it down is, in my view, advantageous for our public policy.
And we know this week that the government will pass legislation around mandatory hotel quarantine. So the provision will be there now to reactivate the system in case it's needed. Do you think it will be needed?
If Omicron turns out to spread widely in vaccinated people and to cause very severe disease, then we really have to do our utmost to control and prevent its spread into Ireland and spread within Ireland. And mandatory hotel quarantine is one of those tools. Some of it is for people, maybe it's an alternative, really strict home isolation. If I licked in a small cottage up at the top of the Wicklow Mountains on my own, then, and you know, with somebody delivering the shopping, I could potentially isolate well there for 10 or 14 days as well. So I think there are other ways of preventing spread of the virus. But mandatory hotel quarantine, I think there is a definite role for it. We've used it before. The legislation's been there before, and it worked well when we did it before, in my view.
Now, children wearing masks in school, Sam, from third class up, it's caused a lot of controversy because it wasn't believed initially that this was going to be mandatory. Now we're told that children could be refused entry to school if they don't wear a mask and they don't have a cert excusing them from doing it. How important do you think the measure is?
Well, I mean, I've come out in the last couple of weeks saying that there isn't really strong evidence proving beyond all doubt that this is an effective control. I see it as an effort to try and decrease the amount of transmission in 9 to 11-year-olds who are at present the highest group, or one of the high levels of transmission is happening in that group. I hope it's only temporary. I feel it's part of a suite of things. Other things like outdoor activities and ventilation and getting rid of crowding, all the things we know, separate toilets, pods and bubbles, those are all the things that can help to keep schools safe. So I think it's what we're doing is now our government and public policy are trying to find sort of nuanced messages that help us to live with COVID in a way that isn't going back to the sort of, you know, 2 kilometres and 5 kilometres movement restrictions that we had, you know, last year, which obviously were very invasive.
Yeah.
So we're trying to find much less invasive ways of doing that. We've discovered that the vaccine alone isn't enough to keep it under control, and there's now a lot of spread in unvaccinated people and in children. So it's a small effort to control that. I think children are, to some extent, small adults. They're modelling themselves on their parents, the people around them. So I hope they go along with it. I hope it's not confrontational, and not, I hope it's done gently.
But surely if there's such concern over rising case numbers in that age group, then contact tracing should be reintroduced in schools, would you say?
Yeah, I agree with that, yeah. I think that in retrospect, when we stopped doing that 2 months ago, may have been one of the problems when we stopped the contact tracing.
But that
also made it harder for parents and teachers, because they then had to try and manage these situations without help from professional contact tracing public health experts. So I think that I agree with that. Contact tracing in schools would be, or for young children, thorough contact tracing for young children with COVID is very wise.
Thank you very much. That's Professor Sam McConkie. And next we are going to talk to Dr. David Coleman about the effect on children of wearing masks for long periods. Good morning to you, David. Thanks very much for joining us this morning. Clinical child psychologist, of course. What is known about the impact of mask wearing on younger children?
Not a lot, unfortunately, probably because it's a relatively recent thing for children to be wearing masks. And I guess what the research evidence that I've certainly looked up just doesn't, you know, it doesn't give us anything absolutely definitive with regard to the impact on children. I think there are some studies that show, for example, there's one study over in China that showed that children who only wear a mask for short periods of time end up reporting more psychological distress than students who wore masks all the time. But again, you know, you have to look at that kind of research and think, well, maybe that's because culturally in China there's a greater acceptance of masks, and maybe it's seen as, you know, culture going against the culture to not wear a mask, and so that might be why those particular students report more distress when they're not wearing masks. you know, against that, then you have a German study. So there were 25,000 children in Germany who were studied, and what they reported in terms of mask wearing difficulties were much more about physical discomfort and headaches and things like that. Although they did also talk about children feeling less happy when they were wearing masks. About 50% of the children wearing masks reported being less happy. But what that particular, say the German study, couldn't also prove is that that was because of the mask wearing alone. And that's one of the big difficulties about the kind of research that's coming out now. It's considered what's called cross-sectional, which means it just looks at a group of children at a particular point in time, as opposed to tracking a particular group of children and then measuring them over time. So we get to see what specific things are happening for these given children now, in 6 months and in a year, for example. That kind of longitudinal research is what allows you to show some level of causality. You know, is it the fact that children were wearing masks that's causing them to be less happy? But at the moment, we can't say that. So it's a mixed bag when it comes to the actual research. And I think, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, if it's going to help reduce the spread of the virus, then maybe that's going to remove some of the other things that we know have caused problems for kids and families, which is, you know, schools being closed. I think that was a very significant thing for children and for families, and caused a lot of difficulty and a lot of distress for both children and families. And I guess that's the bit that we're trying to, perhaps with this measure, you know, avoid.
So it's the lesser of two evils, if you like.
Aileen
Hickey from Parentline was on Morning Ireland this morning saying that they're taking calls from parents who are concerned about this. They're concerned about this having an impact on their children's emotional development when it comes to speech and so on. Further concerns there. Do you think they're well founded, or are people people worried unnecessarily?
So again, there just isn't the research evidence to know one way or another. I mean, I think, you know, the idea that, you know, if children can't see faces, for example, that they mightn't be able to read emotions. There are some studies that are there, and certainly one that I came across that showed that children are able to infer emotions even when faces are partially covered. So that study looked at children's ability to look at emotions when the person that they were looking at had no face covering, had sunglasses on, and then had a surgical mask on. And they found that children were actually able to infer emotions. So it's not that, you know, children can't do these things. And again, you know, children won't be wearing masks at home, so they will still have all the regular interaction with their siblings, with their parents, that will allow them to still do all those normal things in terms of emotional and kind of social development, if you like. And I think that's the thing. Again, if this is a short-term measure, then I don't think it's going to have a long-term impact. If it's a long-term measure, then it's only going to be over time that we're going to really learn how difficult or how bad this might be for children. But at the moment, we just don't know. And I guess, again, it's always then looking at, you know, balancing one risk against another. Is the risk of schools being closed a greater risk than the risk of perhaps children struggling at some point in the future? And I guess that's what we just don't know yet. But you know, I think, yeah, for most children, they will have had, you know, maybe seven, certainly the cohort now who are expected to wear a mask, they'll have had 8-9 years of being able to see everybody's face and learning all the social cues and understanding about, you know, how we communicate at, you know, a social and emotional level. So I'm not so sure necessarily that a short period of time where they mightn't be able to do that in a school setting is going to necessarily have a big negative impact on them.
David, thank you very much. Dr. David Coleman there. Next up on the programme, we'll be discussing MICA redress.